Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello everyone, I'm Chris Wayne and welcome to the Rotten Report podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen, where we once again arrive at the beginning of a new season. This time it's the 2021-22 season, as we have a fourth attempt at getting out of League One. And in our opening fixture, we take on Wigan Athletic at the Stadium of Light, who have graced our presence in the third tier once again after they were relegated from the Championship last season for the third time in 7 seasons. So to bring us up to speed with all the comings and goings at the DW Stadium, we are very pleased to have the company of Chris Marsh from the Pie at Night website and podcast. Hello, Chris.
Good evening.
How's things?
I'm all right. Looking forward to the start of the season. It doesn't seem 2 minutes since sort of it finished, but I suppose we've had the Euros in between, haven't we, as a bit of a buffer.
I know. Are you ready for the proper stuff to get going again now?
Yeah. As much as I like watching England and it was good over the summer, it's not the same as watching your club side, is it?
Nah, it's a distraction, isn't it? But I'd take Sunderland winning something over the national side any day, I think. But, I mean, just a bit about you, Chris, and Wigan Athletic, I mean, how do you find yourself a Wigan Athletic fan and kind of how far back does it go?
We're going back 30 plus years now, 35 years nearly. My granddad and my dad used to take me to Springfield Park, sort of late 80s, early 90s. So we've been going a long time. on and off, I've had a season ticket for at least probably about 25, 30 of those years. A couple of years when I was 16, or probably 12 months-ish when I was 16, and I was made to get a Saturday job, and it didn't exactly coincide with having the afternoons off for the football for a short period. But yeah, I've been going a long time, seen a lot, been up and down.
Yeah, imagine.
And to be honest, there's probably not many clubs had a journey like ours over that 25 years. I'd much prefer it to being an Oldham or a Rochdale and pottering about in the same division for 20-odd years.
Yeah. I was going to say, look, you know, early 90s, knocking around Division 3, I bet you never dreamt 10 years later you'd have a kind of a long stint in the Premier League.
No, and when Dave Whelan took over and said, we want to be in the Premier League in 10 years, everyone thought he was mad. Never, ever envisaged it happening. Much to the point that my dad, when I was growing up, his league team was Spurs. He supported Spurs because he, as a 7-year-old, he saw the 1961 FA Cup final. It was the first televised match he saw and fell in love with Spurs. But like Wigan were his non-league team and never ever thought that they'd ever meet. So yeah.
So was he on the Wigan side when it came down to it?
Yeah, I think Spurs from a distance, but yeah, we've always been watching Wigan.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always been up and down, but I did want to speak to you about the last couple of years, so apologies in advance for kind of dragging this up again, because it's a pretty incredible story. You know, going back to 2018, Whelan family sold up after 23 years being associated with a club, sold to a corporation based in Hong Kong for $22 million, who just over a year ago, June 2020, they sold the club to another group based in Hong Kong, who then announced administration only a month later. I mean, you know, last summer seemed from the outside world to be kind of every football fan's worst nightmare at Wigan. How did that hit everyone at the club? And I mean, could you actually believe when they actually made that announcement only a month after taking charge?
It was completely bizarre, completely out of the blue. I think it came on a Wednesday morning and we just beat Stoke on the Tuesday night. at home and seemingly at that point looking like we were doing all right for staying up, because we'd been in the relegation battle for most of the season. But as I don't know whether it's a common phrase up there, but doing a Wigan and pulling it out of the bag with the last 10 or 12 games, with a handful of our run of games, we have a sort of a joke that a running joke that we don't play well with the orange ball, so we're all right at the start of the season, and then when the weather gets bad and the pitches are a bit of a mess and they don't like playing in the rain throughout the winter, and then come the end of February and then it's picking up again, they're all right, they're back on it. Yeah, it was just completely bizarre, and without getting myself in legal trouble if this gets heard in the wrong places, it wasn't even as straightforward as you've just described it. When you say one company sold to another company, it seems as if it was sort of sold to himself. There was rumours at one point that were put out by Rick Parry that there was a gambling debt involved. The other thing, the fans last year was all over the internet finding all sorts about him, paper trails with regards to accounts registered all over and something in the Cayman Islands, and did this fella that he'd sold it to even exist. We have someone who's a regular guest on our podcast who has his own travel business and spends quite a lot of time out in China and North Korea, etc., Hong Kong, over that way. And he was getting people who has contacts out there translating newspaper articles out there for us and all sorts of stuff. The fact, it is an open fact, that because it was Begbie's trainer who were appointed administrators, one of them came out quite early doors and said that they were contacted before the sale had even gone through about placing Wigan in administration. So it just, I don't really want to use the word corruption, but it's not just a straightforward, like, decided that they can't afford to pay the debts anymore and that's it. They literally just decided they were pulling out for whatever reason. There was talk of a £40 million loan that was due up in the July, and they've used it as some sort of money laundering chance to bounce some money through the club, through the Cayman Islands and out the other side to pay this debt off. The problem is, there's no way of proving any of it. And when you've got owners that are based in Hong Kong and they're that far away, there's no way of proving any of it. The thing, the hardest part of it, really, I suppose, and there was a lot of people that had been at the club for a long time who ended up losing the jobs. Nonetheless, the chief exec, Jonathan Jackson, who's dad was involved with Wigan in the 80s and whatnot, to the point where in the 80s where they looked like they were struggling for money, there were people wandering around doing collections with buckets and all sorts. And he'd been at the club for a hell of a long time, ended up losing his job. And people in the ticket office that we've all known, the we've come back with the stewards, even people like the stewards. You go to the game and you see the same steward on your steps every time you go, and as much as they're there to do a job, you'll have a chat with them and say hello. And a lot of them are local people. Yeah. The ones that are there now or that have been there since the start of the season are all from some sort of contracted company. You don't know who they are. And it's those sorts of things that you don't realise the effect. Someone pointed out I went to the friendly on Friday, and someone pointed out on Friday night that all the tellies have gone off the concourse. And it's things as simple as that, as the administrators taking all the tellies down and selling them to pay debts. But we've come out the other side and we're debt free. So I suppose that's a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean, just on that staff, I read it was like 75% of all of the backroom staff. I mean, that just kind of rips the heart of the club, that, doesn't it? Especially in an area like Wigan.
Yeah, and big employer, and all, a lot of locals ended up suffering at the hands of it.
I mean, you mentioned Rick Parry as well. I mean, was that when you say the kind of secretly filmed thing? Because I read that he was kind of talking about putting bets on that Wigan would be relegated, which just incredible, isn't it?
And again, it was a rumour, but it only got made public by him at that point, up until he said it. And it was a fan who happened to live down the road from him, knew that he lived down the road, and went and sort of spotted him at his garden gate and was asking him. And he was filming it surreptitiously on his phone. But up until that point, no one had even mentioned the fact that it could have been due to a betting syndicate. It was him that put that in the public eye. So you sort of think, well, where have the AFL got that from? But
if he's going around saying that, some, things like that, then surely somewhere some rules were broken somewhere along the line. Because if not, I mean, where are we if no rules were broken and they were able to do that?
That's it. It's, I suppose, rules must have been broken somewhere. It's the whole, there's no protection to any of it. And nothing seems to have changed. We as Wigan fans, as much as it had happened to us and wouldn't have wished it on anybody, perhaps except for Bolton, who'd already been through it. But nothing seems to have been changed on the back of it. There's sort of suggestions at the time of, well, when a new owner takes over, they should have to put up X amount of pounds in a bond that the EFL keep hold of for the duration of their ownership. And then if things do go wrong, they've got like 6 months of money to keep the club running while they find a buyer. They'll seemingly just turn around and say, right, as from tomorrow, I'm not paying any bills, it's up to you.
Yeah, it's scary how kind of quickly you just feel like you can, like this sort of thing can happen. You can just kind of lose control because, I mean, I was reading as well, ahead of last season, it looked a bit unsure whether Wigan would have the finances to fund themselves through last season. And I saw that the fans raised $500,000 initially with quite a bit more kind of further on to keep the club running. I mean, did it actually fail throughout all last summer? Did it actually fail at certain points that you thought we just could lose our football club here?
Yeah, especially what had happened with Bury and Macclesfield, not too far away from Wigan. It was a case of we really could end up with having to start a Phoenix club. And I know it, to some extent, discussions around that got quite far down the road with the we might not be able to finish the season. Apparently, and I don't know for definite, but the EFL were adamant that Wigan would finish the season, regardless of how, whether they were going to pay out TV money or transfer monies that they'd receive from other clubs that were owed to Wigan to do that. The fans did rally round and we raised a hell of a lot of money, and that was paying towards the end of the season that we were put into administration, paying for coaches to away games and hotels for the players and all sorts of stuff. That was what that initial like block of fundraising was used for. And then the second lot was sort of earmarked for trying to get a fan representation on the board. But again, the costs, the amount of money involved in doing so, in having enough money to buy a share or enough shares to get representation on the board, it's astronomical and it's not looking likely. But there is a pot of money that's still there with the supporters club. And maybe it's a rainy day fund, or if this happens again and we just keep it there as a backup option.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that sort of thing needs to be thought about. But I mean, just as a kind of final thought, I mean, on some of this, because obviously it was the kind of Whelan family who sold it to these people. I mean, is that a kind of a mark against their name in a way, because they did so much good for Wigan, but to give it to that consortium and went on to do that? I mean, I know hindsight's it's a wonderful thing, but do you think wasn't kind of due diligence going on when they made that initial deal?
I don't know, because from them first being muted for takeover and it actually going through took a good 6 to 9 months. So you'd like to think that there was something done. I wouldn't say it's a mark against Whelan, because at the time he wanted to sell. There'd been two or three people he'd spoken to and it hadn't gone anywhere. He'd got to a point where, again, he's an elderly man now. He couldn't carry on running it himself. We were running at losses of sort of £1 million a month or something like that. And that's what he was like, to the tune of what he was funding the club to. But we were becoming sort of, and that sounds daft, but more sustainable. We were signing players and with the view to developing them and selling them on and bringing in enough money in transfer fees to cover the cost of like the next season going by it. And we've got a very, very well run academy. And that was another heartbreaking thing of the whole administration, is that the academy's been decimated. A lot of our young players ended up going for cheap. Joe Geldart went to Leeds for next to nothing. Another young lad, Alfie Devine, ended up going to Tottenham, not a lot of money. Another one went off to Brighton. And those were, you think, well, if you can keep hold of them and get 2 or 3 years out of them, that some of the prices paid for Championship players now, and I know we'd been relegated, but if we'd have managed to get promoted again and had this run of youth in the team and giving them a chance, you can get good money for young players at even a Championship level nowadays, and that would have funded the club. I think we lost something like at least £45 million worth of players for the sum total of about £9 million, if that, probably not even that.
Yeah, I remember that Divinedale. I remember thinking at the time, it kind of stretched out, didn't it, that Divinedale? It looked like it was going to happen a few times before it actually did, and I'm not sure you got kind of the most money you could have got from.
No, but you're in a position, you're in a position where clubs can take advantage of you, and as much as it's not very nice, and you think, well, the likes of Tottenham have got more than enough money to be paying, not like top whack, but decent prices for people. We've done it in the past. We took advantage at one point when Crystal Palace was in a similar situation to sign Victor Moses for next to nothing, so we can't really complain too much.
Yeah.
I suppose the one thing that really stuck in our craw was Chelsea. Our goalkeeper coach went to Chelsea and they wouldn't even give us something like 20 grand in compensation for him, which 20 grand's not a lot of money, but it would have meant the world to us at the time, just to be able to pay like a week's worth of wages or whatever, your squad wages.
Doesn't surprise us though in the slightest.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, you'd like to think it's swings and roundabouts, but I'm not sure. But I mean, it got into last season. I mean, going into November of last year, there was a Spanish bidder who, and all that was all up in the air. But Wigan were kind of bottom of League One, 2 wins in the first 11. And then John Sheridan resigned to become manager of Swindon Town, who were 4 places above you and 2 points above you in the table. I mean, in hindsight, that wasn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. But would you say, I mean, was that kind of rock bottom at that point when your manager left? You couldn't get new owners in and things looked pretty bleak coming up to Christmas last season.
It did. And at one point it looked like the Spanish lot were sort of the last chance, the last people in town looking at it. The people that have come in now, the Bahrainis, have sort of said they were always in the offing, but the administrators gave the Spanish bid exclusivity for quite a long time and kept extending it, sorry. So all of that's going on and there's other people looking to bid and they can't get access to any of the documents, they can't do their own due diligence, etc. The Spanish bid failed because of one of the people that they wanted as a director had some black mark against him in Spain and therefore wasn't going to pass the EFL test. Which is ironic considering what had happened with the previous owners. When you bear in mind, when you say the administration takeover, as in one company sold to another and then they put in as an admin a month, that seems to just get waved through without anybody asking any questions. Because basically the current owners and the new owners at that stage were sharing half of the board was the same set of people. And it was almost as if we were swapping one out and one in and changing the name of the company. And the EFL seemed to wave that through. So the Spanish bid fell down and it wasn't looking very bleak. The thing with regards to Sheridan sort of coming in and leaving, Liam Richardson, who was Paul Cook's number two, was the coach early on, and sort of indications were that he didn't feel confident in doing it on his own and he wanted the administrators to bring someone else in and he'd carry on as a number two or work in the background, etc. They brought John Sheridan in and he was a waste of space. And I think if you ask Swindon fans, they will say the exact same to you. There was an article at Weekend, and I can't remember who it was, where it was, but it was about Swindon. It was about Sheridan and Swindon, because the guy that's owned Swindon for a long time, Lee Power, has just relinquished control, and the fans have been fighting against that for a long time. But there was an article about Sheridan, and it was one of the players who'd been interviewed at Swindon who said, one game, they didn't even see him, throughout the warm-up, through nothing. He literally came in the dressing room 2 minutes before kick-off, wrote the formation on the board and walked out again. Didn't even utter a word to him, just sent him out onto the pitch. And we had similar at Wigan in that he didn't accept any responsibility for anything. And bear in mind, we'd lost that many players. We were playing a lot of our first team at that stage of the season was academy. They were young kids. They sort of needed an arm round them and a bit of encouragement because they're young and they're actually having to step up and play league football for the first time. They've not had the chance to be blooded. They're literally thrown in and playing Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday against grown men, against teams full of grown men. And he was berating them. He was giving post-match interviews going, well, I've given them instructions and they're all useless and stuff like that. Well, it's not exactly getting where you wanted to. And the marked difference from when he went to Liam Richardson and Gregor Rioch, who runs the academy. And obviously, Rioch had worked with a lot of these kids over a number of years. The marked difference in attitude and just the way we played after he'd gone was unbelievable. And it did take time to get results. And we did have the luxury of a January transfer window to bring in some loans and a bit of experience, etc. But it was young kids for that early part of the season that were carrying us. And they'll never be forgotten. None of them will be forgotten for the fact that they stood up to be counted when we needed them.
Was that in the Athletic, I think?
It might have been. It might have been.
Yeah, and I mean, because John Sheridan left Swindon in April, didn't he? I don't know whether he got the boot or he resigned from there, but he only lasted kind of 5 months there. But I mean, Richardson, obviously, from the outside looking in, you know, where you were around Christmas time when Sheridan left. I mean, from us looking in, I mean, he did a cracking job under the circumstances. Was there always a worry, though, that he'd go and follow Paul Cook at Ipswich?
I think at one point there was, yeah, because we all expected it to happen. The minute Cook went into Ipswich, everyone was thinking, well, how long is it before Richardson goes and joins him? Cook came out quite early and said, not until the summer at least. And that sort of gave us a bit of respect. And I think Cook was probably quite well aware of the fact that he was held in high regard with Wigan fans, despite the fact that he'd left, as in the summer. And I understood why he left when he gave his reasons in that we were still in a relegation battle and the administrators were trying to sell players from under his nose throughout that without even telling him. So, yeah. And it was all a bit underhand. So that's why Paul Cook walked. And I can understand him having been there for 2-3 years, got us to the championship, kept us up, built a squad that potentially, if we hadn't have had the 10-point deduction, we'd definitely have stayed up and we'd have finished probably towards the top end of the bottom half of the table and then keep them couple of additions and go again the following season in the championship, we'd probably have a good chance of trying to make the playoffs. And he'd had it all pulled from underneath him. I can understand why he probably felt, well, I need a break. I'm not prepared to do this again. And then obviously 3 or 4 months later, the Ipswich job comes up and he goes down there. But yeah, Richardson leaving and following him was a bit of a worry. Richardson came out quite early, I think, and said, no, I'm happy where I am for now. And we sort of half expected that it might happen this summer, but I don't think it, definitely not, because he signed an extension to his contract. And I think the other thing I think with Richardson is that I think the 6 months that he had from when Sheridan left to the end of the season and the run of results we weren't on and the fact we managed to stay up again, I think it's shown him that he can do it as a number one. He doesn't have to be a number two anymore. He can do it as a number one.
If he can do it during everything that was going on, last season, yeah, I'm not exactly sure what else can throw at him, to be honest, because the takeover happened in March eventually. Consortium led by a Bahrain businessman, obviously stayed up and things seemed a lot more positive. But I mean, just in terms of the general fan base, I mean, after the experiences the last couple of years, is everyone just a bit wary of, you know, how things are being run, or is it quite relaxed now, or still people are a bit worried about new owners?
Generally, I think I think that the majority of the fan base has been swept up with the romance of, oh, we've been saved and they seemingly are rich owners. And there's been a lot of talk of us splashing the cash out of the transfer window, but you've got to bear in mind we start with a squad of, I think we had six registered professionals at the end of last season to go into this, so we needed to build a squad. They might have signed quite a lot of players, but most of them up until this point have been on a free. I think we paid some money for a striker from Rochdale, Stephen Humphreys, but I think generally I don't think we've paid out a transfer fee as such until now.
Yeah, and I noticed, I mean, it's all interesting stuff, because obviously Sunderland have, you know, we've been through a couple of takeovers recently of varying different standings, but I mean, I noticed the owner has a presence on social media, and we had a bit of an experiment with that a few years back. So how's that going?
I'm not entirely convinced that it's actually him, but that's running it. So one of the guys that's involved in Wigan is a gentleman called Dr. Tom Markham, who's a football finance expert, and he's been involved in producing films, like football documentary films. I think he's been involved in some iteration of Football Manager, the game, at some point. But I'm not entirely sure that it's Mr. Hamad that's running the Twitter account all the time. But yeah, he's certainly, whoever's behind it is certainly getting the fans on side.
Interesting. It's probably the best way to be, because we had our owner, previous owner, who did it, you know, as a personal account. And yeah, it went very wrong very quickly. It's probably the best way to run it if you're going to do it.
I do think you have to be very wary, because when it's going good, it's great, isn't it? But the minute something goes wrong, you get 10 or 12,000 people tweeted for your head or telling you how to run things. It's, you've either turn your notifications off or have a very thick skin.
That's it. What, one bad result and you've got thousands of people telling you, the manager. So, But I mean, we'll kind of circle ran to kind of this summer. As you mentioned, you've done a bit of business. I just want to get straight into the main two, no messing about, as you've obviously signed Max Power and Charlie White on free transfers, who both played major roles for us last season, getting to the playoffs. And I want to start with Max Power, because we signed him from you 3 years ago. Are Wigan fans happy to see him back?
Yeah, I think when he ended up leaving Wigan, he sort of fell out of favour a bit with Paul Cook. And it was almost like, I don't want to question Max's attitude, but I think Max wanted to play central midfield and wasn't getting in there. And Cook was asking him to play sort of either right back or wide right, and he didn't exactly like it. And I think it affected his performances. Now, whether that was purely down to attitude or that it's not his favoured position and what have you, I don't know. So he sort of fell out of favour with Cook and ended up going off up to Sunderland. And at the time, there was some question, some Wigan fans who were sort of, well, he can't do it at Championship level, or, you know what I mean? They sort of didn't see it as a great loss that he'd gone. I think who we'd signed as his replacement, Joe Williams, who we got from Everton, that has ended up at now at Bristol City. Definite improvement on Max. But he's a solid League One player, Max Power. And I think there's a couple of reasons why Richards has brought him back in. He knows him from his time here before. And I don't think there's any arguing that he's got leadership qualities. And that's probably what we need, a bit of experience, a bit of leadership, because we've still got a smattering of young lads in the squad. And from what I've seen so far in pre-season, he's playing well. And maybe it's a case of being out of the Jermaine Genus, didn't he, up at Newcastle, made a point of it being a goldfish bowl. Maybe being up at Sunderland with the amount of fans you've got up there is a bit of a goldfish bowl, and maybe he didn't. I don't know, I can't comment because I haven't watched him a lot up at Sunderland, but I get the impression that Sunderland fans now, from what I've seen, don't think that it's a great loss that he's left you. But
well, you know, his time at Sunderland, he came in, he looked like he was busy early on when he first signed for us 3 years ago, and then he got sent off twice in the space of just a few weeks. And then after that, it was really weird because he seemed to then, for a long stretch, he seemed to kind of forget what type of player he actually was. And he couldn't quite find a role that suited him. You know, last season he played a lot of right back. We had a lot of injuries, and then you know, the odd time he moved back into midfield, but then he never really ran the show like we probably expected him to. But do you think Wigan fans are expecting the same type of player who left, or do you think it's going to be a different Max Power you've got?
I think a different Max Power. Before, he seemed to be a bit of a more of a box to box midfielder. He's certainly got a goal in him. But I don't expect to see him being that sort of marauding Max Power that we saw before. I think he'll sit at the diamond of a midfield or what have you, and he'll dictate play from there.
Yeah.
That's what I expect.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, like I said, he seemed to forget what type of player he was. So it'll be interesting to see what role he actually takes on for Wigan. But then there's Charlie Wyke, 25 goals in League One last year, 31 goals and 54 appearances in all competitions. And it's weird, I've just rattled off those stats, but I've never known a striker to score so many goals but split a fan base like Charlie Wyke did last season. So what's the feeling about signing someone who kind of bagged so many goals last season?
I don't think a lot of Wigan fans know much about him. I think they see him as a bit of a target man. He's obviously got the goal record, and I think Sunderland fans seemed, this is my general opinion, seemed a bit annoyed that he'd left you for us. but also, there was that sort of double-edged side of things of, oh, well, he's not that good. You know what I mean? It was a strange one. It was like, oh, he's great. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, he's not that good. No, he's not with us. And also saying, like, oh, he only scores with his head, and you're going to have to play to his strengths and what have you. But at the minute, he's looking like the perfect foil for Humphreys, who we've signed from Rochdale, who I mentioned earlier, who's a busy little striker, more of a sort of a playmaker, perfect for a number 10 role. And I think that's how Richardson's going to play them. He's going to play Wyke up front with Humphreys sort of buzzing about in behind. Similar, funnily enough, mentioning strikers between Wigan and Sunderland to Grigg at Wigan under Cook. So Grigg was the main front man. Didn't always get the rewards of his efforts, but he used to run himself into the ground for an hour, and he had Nick Powell 10 yards off the back of him, exploiting the space. by the fact that Grigg was operating, occupying the two centre halves and allowing Nick Powell space. I don't know how Wyk plays if he'd be playing with a playmaker in behind him, playing him in, you know, off the shoulder of the centre half. I don't know, because all I've heard is he's better off getting the ball wide and crossing it to him, and he'll be no good without McGeady. But yeah. time will tell, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. And well, you know, I'm sure Richardson signed him with a plan. You can't just stick someone like Wyk up without a plan. I mean, if the ball comes to him in the box, generally he'll stick it away. But you've got to have players around him. You know, quite often for us last season, he was the only one up front. He was quite isolated, and that's why, you know, we got the ball wide and got the ball in the box. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he got, you know, 15 plus goals this season. But yeah, last season's kind of, you know, 20 odd was a lot to do with McGeady. He's probably a 15 a season striker. Time will tell, but maybe last season was a one off. But we'll see. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Richardson got a plan, like I said. And I think also the fans are.
The other thing I'd say is he's different to the other strikers we've got. It seems to me like Richard's sort of got a plan, got different ways of playing, and whether he sees Wyk as a target man for a little while. And again, Paul Cook, for a long period of the last championship season, before the administration, for a long period seemed to be playing sort of target man, long ball football, up to Kiefer Moore when we signed him. And it was almost like, and I don't know whether it was coming from Cook or whether it was the players just sort of regressed into going, oh, well, he's 6'5", let's launch the ball at him and see what sticks. But it was only in the latter half of the season, when we started getting the ball down and playing because we had the players to do it, that things sort of come good. And Kiefer Moore, again, scored goals with his head for Wales, etc. But he's a decent footballer if you get the ball into feet. But again, you don't know whether it comes from the manager or whether it comes from the players just not necessarily listening to instructions or just regressing to playing a certain way.
Yeah, and I think there was an expectation that that Charlie Wyk, you know, with the record he had last season, would maybe, you know, leave us to say, oh, well, I'm going to make a move to the Championship. But I'm not sure whether there's offers he turned down or what. But it was kind of a bit of a surprise to see him leave, but end up in League One. We thought he might try and make another crack of it. But I mean, just on the other signings, I mean, Jack Watmore, you signed for Portsmouth. He was a kind of regular in centre-half there for them. Gian Edwards played for Ipswich 3 years, right wing. Tom Naylor, same for Portsmouth. Jordan Cousins signed from Stoke. Ben Amos in goal. So, I mean, what's the feeling about the recruitment you've managed to get done?
Quietly impressed. The likes of Watmore was obviously sort of captain leader material at Portsmouth. We seem to have taken players off what I would consider rivals for going up. And if you're strengthening yourselves and weakening your rivals at the same time, Wyk possibly is another one in that bracket that we've already mentioned. If he gets 15 goals, that's 15 goals that you've not got that we have. And again, some of the other players we've signed, experienced, leadership again, I would say that. And also, I think to some extent, I think we've built a decent makings of a first team. We've unbeaten in 4 pre-season friendlies, 2 of which are against Championship opposition in Preston and Stoke. Both of those games didn't really look troubled. And I know the pre-season friendlies, but we've played well, we've controlled the games, we've scored goals. I think we've got the makings of a strong 11 for this league. The manager came out last week and said he still thinks he needs another 6 or 7 players, which I tend to agree with, but some of the young players that we had that were playing last season that have also featured in pre-season games, again, haven't looked out of place. Callum Lang scoring goals in pre-season. Adam Long is back in after suffering an injury at some point last season again, hasn't looked out of place. So I think we've got the makings of a strong team. It's just when you get into October, November, December, early part of next year, when you've got your injuries kicking in and suspensions and stuff like that, that's when we might struggle.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I was having a quick look at your squad earlier on, and a bit like us, really, you seem just a bit low on numbers at the minute.
Yeah.
But actually, just before we came on, I read it looks like, and there was a journalist from The Guardian was saying that you're looking like you're going to loan Jordan Jones for the season. He was on loan with us last season from Rangers.
What was he like?
In individual games, he was kind of, you know, head and shoulders above anything in League One, but the next week he'd just disappear. It was one of them where you could tell he had the talent. It was just getting him up for game after game. Maybe it was because he wasn't fit, not playing at Rangers, but maybe if he has a full season of it, he can get that consistency. But on his day, he was absolutely brilliant for us.
Another one to look out for.
Yeah, if you bring him in. The other one I was going to mention is Bailey Wright, because you were linked with him last week as well from us, but it went a bit quiet on that front. Do you think that's one you may be still looking at?
Possibly. I think because obviously we need to get numbers in, you wonder where the links are coming from. The fact that we've already signed players from yourselves, or there seems to be a history of players moving between the two clubs. It's not like there's a sort of frosty relationship there where transfers between the two don't take place. I don't know. I always thought sort of a lot of contracts expire on the 31st of July, don't they? And there'll be a lot of players now where, and because of what's happened over the last 18 months, there'll be a lot of squads or clubs trimming squad sizes ever so slightly or what have you, because they've run up debts and they're struggling, where there might suddenly be quite a few players available on freeze again. And we've done decent business without having to shell out too much money. And you don't always have to pay big bucks to get decent players in. Under Whelan, just going back to Whelan, under Whelan, we never really paid massive transfer fees for players to some extent. The way that he sort of did it was quite happily paying over the odds in wages. Come and do a season in the Championship with us. If we don't go up and you want to move, then you can have your move. But and the likes of Matt Jackson and Ariane Dezou and those sorts of players at the time were sort of bottom-end Premier League players, but he managed to get them to come and play for us at a league below by sort of paying over on the wages. And I wonder whether they're doing a similar sort of thing now.
Yeah, that just had a flashback there. I mean, that was some quality Championship manager type players you pulled out there. In terms of pre-season, I saw you had some good results against Preston and Stoke, but things generally gone well over the summer? Things feeling positive after the pre-season?
Yeah, definitely. I think fans are itching to get going. The players look settled. We seem to have done quite a bit of the business early, so they've had quite a bit of time together in pre-season. We've had some good results, and against opposition who are higher up than us, to both Preston and Stoke Championship clubs and decent Championship squads at that, and we played well against them. So I think it's a bit of a strange league in that there's obviously the likes of Wednesday that came down, who are a big club, yourselves, who, when it's full, it's a big intimidated ground, and the fact that you get big crowds all the time and the money coming through your tills that way, as opposed to a Wigan. And we'll admit our crowds aren't the biggest. And that sort of, to some extent, gives you an advantage because you've got a bit more money to play with. But I don't think, realistically, the league overall, I don't think there's anyone to fear. And it's one of them. It's potentially, it's there for the taking. There's probably a good 6, 7, 8, 9 clubs that could be in with a shout of finishing top two. I don't think any of them would really have any great grumbles if it was 2 out of the 6, 7, 8, 9 of them.
I'm going to bring you back on that before we finish. I'm going to hold you to an answer on that in a second. But I mean, in terms of this weekend, in terms of the game, what should Sunderland fans be expecting in terms of, you know, how you're going to set up? I mean, does Richardson come out the blocks? Are you going to be in our faces, or is it kind of possession game, or kind of frustrate us? I mean, what do you think Wigan's game plan's going to be?
I think he likes to keep the ball, but I don't think it's possession for possession's sake. Try and go forward and be penetrative with it. He seems to set up in a sort of a 4-2-3-1. We certainly won't look to sit back, and I think given the opportunity to attack, we'll have a go at you.
Other than Charlie White and Max Power, because we know all about them, but who else should Sunderland fans be looking out for to cause us problems?
Humphreys is the one. Number 10, we signed him from Rochdale. We paid about 400 grand for him. He's looked tidy in. He's got an eye for goal. Scored a couple of brilliant free kicks in and around the edge of the box, which a couple of times I think it was him and Max Power stood over them. And he was arguing with Max as captain as to who was taking him. And I think Max let him have one and was glad he had when he saw it fly in. But Humphreys... Callum Lang, if he gets on, is a young striker who did all right last season with a run of games. He's been out on loan quite a few times, Shrewsbury, and spent quite a bit of time up in Scotland at Motherwell. but when he came back in the January of last season, came back from a loan up in Scotland, was the one that helped fire the goals to keep us up, him and Will Keane. And Will Keane, another one, seems to be playing in a number 10 role more than playing out and out striker now that Wyke's in. But again, got an eye for goal.
Yeah, I was looking at Humphreys earlier on. It seemed like he was like a, right, in terms of goal scoring, he was like a 1 in 3 type player.
Yeah.
So I was trying to work out what, but it makes sense if you say he's that one who's going to sit behind. If you were in Lee Johnson's shoes ahead of Saturday, how would you be targeting this Wigan side to get a result? Are there any weaknesses we can expose this weekend?
I don't know how well we are sort of defending set pieces. It's something that's been a fragility for the last 12, 18 months, two, three years, particularly under Cook. We seem to be, I wouldn't necessarily said soft, but it was certainly teams did expose us at corners and free kicks and things like that. So that would be the one I would say, which is ironic considering your lot said that's how White scores goals from crosses, and now he's not going to be there to do it.
Well, to be fair, he's not bad actually defending. Actually, if you stick him in there of opposition corners and that, he does a job with that. Just on Sunderland, I mean, just because it's always interesting getting an outside view of it, because Sunderland have been relatively quiet this summer. We've only brought in Pritchard, Callum Doyle, Corey Evans in midfield. Mm. So, I mean, just from the outside, I mean, what's your assessment of the business Sunderland have done before we get into the new season?
I don't know too much about Doyle and Corey Evans. Pritchard is a tidy little player. And again, one, I think, probably bottom end of Championship. If he gets a run of games and can build a bit of form, so he's probably your one to watch. What's he look like in pre-season?
Well, typically we signed him and then he immediately came down with a positive COVID result. So he's
you haven't had a chance to see him play yet. Is he? Will he be out for weekend?
I think he's definitely failing it, and he's out for the first few games at least, I think.
So he's actually had it and felt ill rather than just tested positive.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a shame. The thing as well with that is once he recovers from it and can train again, you don't know the long term effects of it, do you? And how long it's actually going to take him to build a bit of fitness then. But yeah,
a bit of a shame. But we've signed a real kind of Rolls Royce at the back in Callum Doyle. He's only 17 from Man City. You'd think he was in his prime, kind of 26, 27. If Man City are churning those type of players out, it'd be scary to watch their academy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this weekend, two sides of the bookies fancy to be in the mixer for promotion at the end of the season. In terms of odds for the game, I was taking a look at it. Sunderland 10 to 11 on to win the game. Wigan are 3 to 1 to get all 3 points away from home. The draw's 5 to 2. So if you're having a punt on it, would you fancy a correct score for this weekend?
I try and avoid predictions. I'd tell you now, I'd settle for a draw. It's a difficult place to go first weekend of the season. No one really knows much about the opposition, especially with new players in. But yeah, I'm quite happy to not get beat most weeks. I think if you can start keeping clean sheets, that's a platform to build confidence and go on and win games. And also, I don't want to peak too early.
Yeah, so is that.
If we're still in the mix after Christmas, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I've got a feeling it's going to be a low scoring game, maybe 1-1. 1-1's 5-1, so it might be worth a punt. But the first goal scorer for Wigan, any tips, or is it going to be inevitably Charlie Wyke who gets you?
I don't know. Him, Wilkie or Humphreys, it depends on who Richardson chooses to play up front, whether he'll throw Wyke in. I think he probably will, because he started and played in most of the pre-season games since he came in. Him or Humphreys, I keep mentioning Humphreys, but I really like the look of him. He scored a couple of fantastic goals when Rochdale beat us at the DW last season, and I know we were playing with a sort of a young team, etc., but he really did look a player. And I know you mentioned earlier his record's 1 in 3. I'd be interested to see if he could improve that a little bit playing in a, I don't want to say bigger club than Rochdale, but with better players around him.
Yeah, I'd be looking out for Humphreys. I was looking at him, like I said, and it was difficult to know where he was at, but after speaking to you, it's going to be interesting seeing him. I mean, and to quickly finish on the kind of crystal ball front, I was looking at odds for promotion. at Ipswich and Sunderland, 9-4 favourites. Then Sheffield Wednesday, 11-4, Portsmouth, 10-3. And then Wigan are 7-2. And, you know, it's odd because, you know, you finished a point above the relegation places last year, and but the Buggies think you're going to be in the mix. So what's the general expectations for Wigan fans this season?
I think generally, seeing as we are, was always either flirt with promotion or relegation, and after everything that's gone on over the last 12, 18 months, I think we'd quite happy be settling for mid-table and a season of nothing to worry about towards the end. I do think in the starting 11 that we've got, we've certainly got the quality to be up there. Depends on who else we manage to bring in and get that strength in depth, and whether we manage to keep free from any long-term injuries. But from the starting 11, we've certainly got the quality. And I think I said earlier, I think the league in general is much of a muchness. There's a lot of unknown quantities, but nothing really to fear. I don't think there's going to be any team that runs away with it. Certainly not.
Well, on that note, I was going to say, who do you fancy for the two automatic places?
Ask me again at Christmas.
Yeah, the predictions at this point never go right. We're starting to put some up on the site, and I just know it's a load of garbage while I'm putting them together. But there you go. To be honest, it's great for everyone just to see fans back in the stadium for a start. I imagine if pre-season friendlies going a bit like that, everyone kind of getting back into it and feeling the buzz of getting back.
Yeah, it was a bit strange being in the ground again on Friday night.
Mm.
Felt a bit weird at first, but it was just nice to be back and feel normal after everything that's gone on. Some semblance of normal. You can't be that walking up the steps and seeing the turf for the first time again, can you?
No. To be honest, I mean, I think Saturday, I think the atmosphere is going to reflect that kind of feeling. Everyone just kind of that feeling of normality, really. But
yeah,
it'd be good to get back into it. But yeah, on that note, I just want to say thank you very much, Chris. Really enjoyed the chance to catch up. And obviously, except against us, all the best for the season ahead, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nice one. Cheers, Chris. And thanks again, everyone, for listening. Keep a look out at Rocker Report for all the build-up ahead of the game. Keep an eye out on all the usual places for the next pod, as they should be dropping pretty rapidly now the circus is back. But from us, it's bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.